One of the buzzwords in modern society is tolerance. Whatever else we believe or do, we must tolerate other people. We mustn't be intolerant. In passing, I would point out that ironically, Britain is becoming more and more intolerant. There is nothing more intolerant than a society that has tolerance as its mantra. But that's an aside. This morning I want to think about the church, because all of this has affected the church. The church in this country aims to be tolerant. And at its best, that is a wonderfully Christian virtue. Jesus loved those who were different, whose society delighted to exclude. The Christian church should be a place like that. It should be a safe place for all kinds of people to come. For all our variety, we are family. And we don't fight and fall out just because someone is different from us. This applies to what we believe as well. Christians hold different views on a whole range of issues. Again, we live with that variety. We don't fall out. Which means that you will hear different things taught from the front as well. But for all of this, we need to ask where the boundaries are. Do we tolerate anything and everything? Or are there some boundaries and some limits to that? And specifically, where are the boundaries in what someone would be allowed to teach? Some Christians believe it's wrong to drink alcohol. Others believe it's not wrong, but it is unwise. Others would say it's fine in moderation. Can we live with a range of views there? I think we can. Last month, a vicar in South London allowed Muslim daily prayers to be held in his church. He concluded the event reading part of Psalm 139, replacing God's name with the word Allah. Is that a practice we can tolerate, accept the variety? No, I don't believe it is. And this week, his bishop has said that he won't tolerate it either. But where are the boundaries? Now, it's not my plan this morning to give you a definitive list, what's acceptable and what's crossed the line. If you think about it, that's a good thing I'm not going to do that, because it would take us all day, and even then we wouldn't cover everything. You just have to take each issue on its own merits. What Titus chapter 1 does insist is that there are boundaries and that they matter. You'll remember, if you've been here, that the church on Crete was young. Paul started it not long before this letter was written. He hadn't had time to set up the leadership in the new churches. So he left Titus behind to see to this. And we learnt last time that part of the job for these leaders was to teach the faith and also to correct those who teach falsely. And then today we learn why this was so important. There are lots of people on Crete who were teaching but who had crossed the line. So I want to show us two things from these verses this morning. Firstly, I want us to look at what Paul says about these false teachers. He seems to think this is really serious. So we need to understand why it's so important to have those boundaries in place. The variety mustn't be limitless. And then I want to look at the particular ideas being taught on Crete. We might not be able this morning to draw every line in the sand, but we can at least learn from Crete about one boundary. So here's our first heading: false teaching ruins Christians. False teaching ruins Christians. Verse 10, there are many rebellious people, full of meaningless talk and deception, especially those of the circumcision group. They must be silenced. They must be silenced is strong language. It's how you might talk of muzzling an animal. Literally, Titus is to put a stop to it. Make them put a sock in it. Stopper them up. Silence them. Shut them up. Stop them talking. Why is it so crucial that these people stop teaching? Well, five things about these people and their teaching. First, their teaching is empty. He calls it meaningless talk, babble. There's nothing to it. It's a load of old rubbish. You might think nobody would be taken in by something so hollow and meaningless. But second, their teaching is deceptive. People confuse it for the real thing. The teachers talk about God and Jesus, the cross and the empty tomb, God's love and kindness. There might be nothing there when you peel away the layers, but not everybody bothers to peel away the layers. And so superficially, it looks real. So that people are being taken in. It's deceptive. Which means third, it's successful. Verse 11, they are disrupting whole households by teaching things they ought not to teach. Now this might be talking about families going along with all of this, or it might be referring to the fact that the early Christians met in each other's homes, so that it's more like what we would call a house group. Either way, the teaching was successful. If you went to a church in Crete, before this letter arrived, you had been watching one family after another, one home group after another, embrace this new teaching. They were dropping like ninepins. But fourth, it's damaging. Paul does not pull his punches, in case you've missed that so far. As these households go along with this teaching, they are being disrupted. It's another very strong word, literally overturned. It's the word that was used when Jesus overturned the tables in the temple. Families, households, home groups turned on their heads. Let me put it in modern English for us. They were being trashed by this teaching. And fifthly, it is selfish. They are teaching things they ought not to teach, and that for the sake of dishonest gain. What drives these teachers is what they can get out of it. There are all kinds of ways to line your own pocket by teaching falsely about Jesus. But in a nutshell, if you teach what is popular, what people will like, the latest thing, they'll happily pay you a salary and the book deals will keep coming through and so on. But if the truth is going out of fashion, but you insist on sticking to it, those things might start to dry up. That's what was rampaging Crete. Empty, deceitful, successful, damaging, selfish. A load of rubbish that confusingly looks like the real thing, so that people and households were being taken in to their great ruin, all peddled by people who want to line their own pockets. That's why it's so serious. It's why they need stoppering up. False teaching ruins Christians, ruins churches. Picture the person who has always wanted a Rolex watch. Perhaps it's you. Perhaps you've always wanted a Rolex. Perhaps you own one. In which case, I apologise for where we go next. Because this person has saved for years. And finally, they go to a glitzy shop on the high street and they spend their hard-earned cash. And only later do they find out they've bought a fake. Go and get it tested if you have got one, just to make sure. I've put that doubt in your mind now. I'm sure it's fine. They now own a knockoff from a Chinese factory with nothing Swiss about it except the holes in the thing's credibility. The trouble was it looked confusingly like the real thing, which is why people buy them. It's why the sellers make enough to pay the rakes on that glitzy shop. But it's too late. The money has been spent and they won't get it back. And they've lost their chance to buy the real thing, all because a crook ran a scam that lined their own pocket. That's what's going on here, only it's not a watch, it is Christian teaching. The message about how to be saved from hell for heaven, for all eternity. The ruin is not a lost chance to buy a watch, but jeopardizing a place in heaven. The knockoff copy of Christianity is just as hollow as that fake Rolex, and just as convincing. So Paul asks Titus to shut down the shop on the high street, to do what it takes to make sure that this thing stops spreading. Now, just to remind us, in case you've forgotten, not every issue is as serious as this. There are plenty of areas where Christians disagree, and our duty is to love one another in spite of our differences. But in a culture where tolerance is the prime virtue, we are tempted to think that every issue is of secondary importance. That there is no view for which the right response is to ensure that the view no longer gets a hearing, that the person is silenced. This passage cuts across that. Yes, we need to work out where the boundaries are. We don't need witch hunts on everything. Not every issue is treated in this way, but we need to be clear, false teaching ruins Christians. And a big responsibility of this falls to those of us who lead, but we all have times when we need to be discerning and not just believe the first thing we hear that calls itself Christian. Not everything that glistens is gold. You're watching the news. Some issue of Christian belief or practice, some ethical issue is being discussed, and someone comes on to give their opinion, and they're wearing a dog collar. Don't automatically assume that what they say is true. You move to a new town. You're looking for a church to go to on holiday. You pick up a best-selling Christian book to read. Look for the real thing and avoid the fake. False teaching ruins Christians. Well, as I say, we can't look at every issue, but let's look at the one they were up against. Here is one example. False teaching focuses on the external. False teaching focuses on the external. We find out what the issue was on Crete in verse 15. To the pure, all things are pure. But to those who are corrupted and do not believe, nothing is pure. In fact, both their minds and consciences are corrupted. There are two kinds of people in the world. On the one hand, we have the pure. And on the other hand, in the other corner, we have those who are corrupted. You're either pure or you're corrupt. If you're corrupt, the problem is in your heart. Or as that verse puts it, in your mind and in your conscience. The problem is deep inside you, at the level of how you think and in the way your moral compass is set. You simply don't love and cherish those things that are most good. Your thinking, your way of assessing what is good and bad in the world is not lined up with God's heart. That's where the problem lies, in your heart, and it's a problem that we all have without exception. But wonderfully, that's also where the solution lies. We can move from being those who are corrupt to being the pure. Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart." And that's what Paul's talking about here. In chapter 3, he will explain in more detail. We'll get there in July. Because of the kindness and love of God our Saviour, God offers us the gift of having our hearts washed, of being born again, of being made new. So here's what follows from that. If it's the heart that matters, it follows that external things don't matter. They can't corrupt you. They can't purify you either. On the one hand, external things cannot corrupt you. To the pure, all things are pure. If you're pure in your heart, nothing you eat or touch or drink can corrupt you. If God has made your heart new and clean, then you are clean to the very core of your being. And whatever the beer advertisements tell you, no food or drink goes deep enough to reach the parts that otherwise could not be reached and to rob you of that purity. I betray my age, for which I apologize. But on the other hand, external things cannot purify you either. And if you smiled, you just betrayed your age as well. External things cannot purify you either. To those who are corrupted and do not believe, nothing is pure. In fact, both their minds and consciences are corrupted. If your mind and conscience is corrupt, you can't mend it with anything external. Nothing is ritually pure for you. No food, no drink, no rituals, no festivals. Nothing external can cleanse an unclean heart. The problem is too deep. The problem is that you don't believe. Paul has two equivalent ways of describing someone. Those who are corrupted, those who do not believe. If you haven't received a new heart by faith, if you don't trust and follow the risen Jesus for yourself, then external things cannot help you. Here then is one common characteristic of false Christianity down the centuries, a focus on the externals. You may remember in Mark chapter 7, Jesus was criticized by the Pharisees. They had ritual ways of washing dishes before cooking and eating to make sure the food didn't defile you. Why do your disciples not follow these rituals? They wanted to know. And Jesus said this, it's not what goes into you that defiles you. It's just passing through on the way to the sewer. No, he says, what defiles you is what comes out. When something angry, unkind, or untrue comes out, it betrays the problems in our heart. That's where the real problem is found, and that's where it needs to be addressed as well. In fact, Jesus said, this focus on externals goes back even before his time. The prophet Isaiah prophesied about this, about all. 700 years before, he exposed how people were more concerned with human traditions than with God's commands. And so in Titus's day, verse 14, this is the problem with the teachers on Crete. They pay attention to Jewish myths and to the merely human commands of those who reject God's truth. And so in every century since, and in our own day, people who say that the externals are what matter. That being a good Christian is about the services you go to, the rituals you take part in. I've got a number of friends who teach RE to GCSE or even beyond. And this is the mistake that almost every GCSE RE textbook will make. Compare the world's religions. Christians are those who... Hello! Christians are those who celebrate Christmas and Easter, who have baptism and confirmation in their churches, and so on. The reality is that Christians are people who have been given a new heart by the risen Jesus. It changes everything. It makes you clean and pure before God to the core of your being. It changes the way you think and behave in every area of life. And nothing you eat, nothing external, can rob you of that. And nothing you eat, nothing external, can imitate it if you haven't got it. False teaching focuses on the external. So how tolerant should the church be? What are you allowed to teach? And it's all part of the rich variety of the Christian church. And where are the boundaries? Well, we've not pinned down every boundary, but we've seen how important those boundaries are, because there are people, plenty of them, talking empty words who nonetheless look genuine and take people in to their ruin. They must be silenced and we must not be deceived. And in particular, don't fall for those who would say that the externals are what really matter. True Christianity is where we follow Jesus. His teaching is what counts, and it's a matter of the heart.